Talk Show.
Recorded live.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Pastor Eli James here with Pastor William Fink. Another installment of Yahweh's Covenant People. Last Saturday night, Bill and Greg covered, I believe it's chapters 11 and 12 of Acts. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So today we're going to continue in chapter 13. And as Greg Howard did last weekend, I'm going to use the Farrar Fenton Bible. So if you want to follow me along, Bill, I will read from here, and I will keep on deleting how should I refer to this person? Anyway, a lurker who's always adding foul language text to our religious service here. So I'm going to pray for Yahweh to do something about this character and let him be booted off and go back to the little hell that he's coming from. In any case, chapter 13, it's entitled here in the Farrar Fenton version, The Dedication of Barnabas and Saul. Verse 1, there were connected with the assembly at Antioch preachers and teachers, particularly such as Barnabas, Simeon called Niger, Lucius the Cyrenian, and Manaen, the schoolfellow of Herod the Tetrarch, and Saul. Okay, so before going any further, wouldn't this, is it necessarily the case? Because a lot of Paul bashers want to insinuate that anyone who is associated with the Herods is automatically an Edomite.
Well, in the first place here, Manaen is the childhood companion of Herodus.
Okay.
Of Herod.
Okay.
Not Saul.
Right.
Manaen.
Right.
So we have to excoriate the entire Christian assembly at Antioch.
Mm-hmm.
So just throw your New Testament away because one of them was a childhood companion of Herod.
Right.
So just throw the whole Bible away.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. It's in a mixed race society when your children, we all had Italian school chums.
Excuse me.
We all had Jewish school chums that maybe that we didn't know were Jews.
Yeah, that's right.
We all had, maybe I shouldn't pick on the Italians all the time.
Right.
We all had school chums that weren't quite white.
That's right.
Every one of us that grew up in a city,
yeah,
when we were kids, maybe we didn't hang out with them, but we had schoolmates and classmates that weren't white.
Uh-huh.
And here we have a mixed-race society of Edomites and Judahites, and there's no doubt that every one of them didn't have a school chum that was probably an Edomite,
mm-hmm,
or a Canaanite.
Right, right.
It's unavoidable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So
you can't blame them for, their childhood and for what, associates your parents give you when you're a child.
Right.
Yeah.
And this man grew up knowing Herod the Tetrarch, who's from a political family, and he probably reaped some of the benefits of having a buddy whose old man was in politics.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's a natural thing for kids.
Right.
It's an unavoidable situation.
Yeah.
But you become a Christian. Well, I guess that separated, the gospel's supposed to separate the wheat from the tares.
Mm-hmm.
And Manaen became a Christian, so I'm sure he probably stopped hanging out with Herod.
Right. Right. Yeah, he would have
had to. Saul can't be blamed for this.
Right.
Now, I'd like to say a couple of things. First, it doesn't say preachers and teachers.
Okay.
And this is one issue I had last week with Fenton. He takes the word prophetes, which is a prophet,
mm-hmm,
and he translates it into preacher.
Yeah.
And properly in the New Testament, the word that we would translate into preacher is the euangelistes, which is an evangelist,
mm-hmm,
which is a preacher properly.
Right.
Okay, so Fenton takes a liberty there.
Mm-hmm.
That's small, it's minor, but it's meaningful.
Right, right.
Now, Simeon, who is called Niger, this might be the Simeon, the Simon from Cyrene, from Kyrene is the appropriate translation,
mm-hmm,
who was enlisted to bear the Christ of cross.
Right.
The cross of Christ. I'm saying that because, first, the name Simeon is the Hebrew form of the name Simon.
Okay.
Even Peter the Apostle is called both.
Okay.
In one of his epistles, he calls himself Simeon,
mm-hmm,
which is the Hebrew form of the name.
Right, right.
Now, second, he's associated here with Lucius the Quirinian. Okay, so they might both be from Kyrene or Cyrene. Now, it's one thing's real interesting. Simeon's called nigger.
Right.
The G is hard in Latin.
Right.
It's never soft.
Oh, that's where it comes from.
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
And it means black. But, you know, they use that. The word nigger does not mean, it means black, but that doesn't necessarily mean that his skin was black.
Mm-hmm.
You know, often throughout our history, we called men black for other reasons, such as just their hair color.
Right.
And not all white men have blonde or red hair, and it was common for somebody with black hair to be called black.
Mm-hmm.
Now, both Hector of Troy and King of Solomon are described as having raven hair. So white men definitely had black hair, there's no doubt.
Right.
Now what's really interesting is that this stands, there's a contrast here, because Simeon is called nigger or black, and Lucius the Quirinian, Lucius means white.
Okay.
The name means white. So we got black and white here. That's just a little oddity of scripture. That's all.
Interesting.
But I'm sure that none of them had black skin.
Right. Right. Yeah. Okay. My screen froze. I'm having difficulty getting rid of the lurker. But let me just continue here. And while they were worshiping the Lord and fasting, the Holy Spirit said, "You must set apart for me Barnabas and Saul for the work which I have allotted them." Then fasting and praying and laying their hands upon them, they dispatched them. Under the guidance of the Holy Spirit, they accordingly went down to Seleucia, and from there they sailed to Cyprus, and arriving at Salamis, they proclaimed the message of God in the, he says here, in the Jewish synagogues. And they also had as a helper Elymas the magician. And how do you want to characterize it where he says in verse 5, Jewish synagogue? Wouldn't that be a...
Well, it's the assembly hall of the Judeans.
Right.
Is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not Jewish and it's not a synagogue.
Yeah, because it's not the Jewish religion, not the Pharisees' religion. It's the religion of the Judahite traditionalists. Wouldn't that be the correct way of characterizing it?
Absolutely.
Right.
Now, I'd like to talk about Salamis.
Okay.
Okay, and this, you know, when people move, they take names from old places.
Okay.
And apply them to their new places. And I just have to mention that Salamis is on Cyprus, and it's a famous place on Cyprus that goes way back into antiquity. And in Greece, in the Peloponnesus, in between the Peloponnesus and the mainland where Athens was, is an island that's also called Salamis.
Mm-hmm.
So there were two islands named Salamis in the ancient world, and they were in reality, they were both Hebrew, but one was, you know, Greek Hebrews, and the other one was Cyprian Hebrews.
Yes.
And I'm just drawing that little, you know, explaining that. Salamis, the Greek island of Salamis, was made famous during the Persian Wars.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, well, verse 6, and going through the whole of the island as far as Paphos, they found a certain Judean, and there he uses correct terminology, Judean, a magician and sham prophet. Actually, he should have used Jew here, named Bar-Jesus, who was with the proconsul Sergius Paulus, a man of intelligence. He invited Barnabas and Saul, desiring to listen to the message of God. But Elymas the magician, for such is the name when translated, opposed them, attempting to divert the proconsul from the faith. So quite likely he was a Jew.
Right. Now there's a lot to say here.
Okay.
All right. First, Elymas, for thusly is his name interpreted, meaning that doesn't relate to Bar-Joshua.
Mm-hmm.
Elymas must have had another name that was interpreted Elymas, because Bar-Joshua is Hebrew for son of Jesus,
mm-hmm.
or son of Joshua, actually. And Elymas is a Greek word which refers to the stock of a plow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So it may be that he had another name, first name, Bar-Joshua. Bar-Joshua is a Hebrew last name, more or less. You know, if you named your son John, he would be John Bar-Eli.
Mm-hmm.
2,000 years ago in Judea.
Right.
John, the son of Eli.
Okay.
Well, Bar-Joshua means son of Joshua. And Elymas could not have been equated with Bar-Joshua.
All right.
And a lot of commentators try to do that. But he must have had another name, a Hebrew name,
uh-huh.
that was the equivalent of Elymas.
Yes.
And they were calling him by the Greek equivalent.
All right. Very good. So
Okay. Paul must have been, and he brags, you know, he brags in one of the epistles about being a son of the Pharisee, who was also a son of a Pharisee. He must have been from a somewhat influential family.
Okay.
Because here we have them in the home of a proconsul.
Mm-hmm.
With easy access to the Roman proconsul at Paphos. And that's the equivalent today of walking into the governor's office in any state.
Okay.
Okay, so to have access to such a high official of the empire, they must have known him. They didn't come across this man by chance.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we're in the capital. Let's go see the governor.
Right.
Yeah, you know, who does that? Nobody does that. You can't do that
mm-hmm.
unless you have license to do it. Unless you have an in, so to speak.
Right.
Or you know the man. And it's very strange that here, you know, Paul never changed his name.
Right.
Okay. But it's right here in verse 9 that Luke decides to tell us that Saulus is also called Paulus.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what I'm driving at is all Roman and Greek men had multiple names.
Right.
They had a
yeah, the language they spoke in.
They
yeah.
had a gens or a family name. They had a prenomen. They had a cognomen. And some of them had an agnomen.
Mm-hmm.
And what they are a clan name, a family name of one of the patriarchs within the clan,
yeah.
a nickname, and sometimes a family nickname.
Right.
And a given name, all wrapped up into one.
Right, yeah.
And you know, like Vespasian, the famous emperor that we know as Vespasian, his name was actually Titus Flavius Vespasianus, and then he had a fourth name. I forget what
right.
it was.
Okay. Right, okay.
Okay, and Flavia was his family name.
Okay.
So what I'm saying is that Saul, if he was like most other men raised in Greco-Roman society, because he was a Hebrew, but he was also raised in Tarsus.
Right.
And he definitely had a Greco-Roman education as well as a Hebrew. He must have had multiple names.
Mm-hmm.
And so his name was at least Saulus Paulus.
Right.
And okay. Saul was probably his given name. And Paul was probably his family name.
Okay.
And here, I think Luke is making a connection without telling us.
Right.
Between Sergius Paulus and Saulus Paulus.
Okay.
Okay, right. Paul probably knew this guy
because uh-huh.
he was related to him.
Okay, all right.
There's no other explanation that's, yeah. I mean, when you really examine what's going on here.
Yeah, or that they both had a common surname, you know, that.
Well, Paulus is not really a common surname.
Okay.
It's really not. It's an obscure Greek word.
I see.
That huh. means to straddle or rest.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It could mean, or I'm sorry, Saulus means rest. Paulus could mean to swagger or straddle in Greek.
Okay. All right.
And it's really not a common word.
A fence
or a common
straddler.
Name.
And he was a fence straddler for a while.
Well, I think that his name, you know, like all Hebrew names had serious meaning.
That's right.
And I think Paul's name describes the job he was chosen for.
Yes, yes. Okay, very good. Well, let me recite verses 9 and 10. But Saul, who was also named Paul, full of the Holy Spirit, looking at him sternly, said, O you full of all deceit and every villainy, you son of the devil, you enemy of all righteousness, will you never cease to misrepresent the straight path of the Lord? But even now the hand of the Lord is upon you. You shall be blind, and for a time you shall not see the sun. Well, that's not very loving.
Well, absolutely not.
Yeah.
That's the Jews would say that's cruel.
Yeah, right. And so would the modern Judeo-Christians. They would say, Paul never taught us to do anything like that.
Well, I was kind of counting them in when
yeah.
I said Jews.
Right. And so here he is doing precisely that. So, you know, they can't say that he was a pacifist. Where did he get this pacifism from? And continuing, and immediately a mist and darkness came over him, and staggering, he groped for someone to lead him by the hand. The proconsul, on seeing what had happened, believed, being struck with the teaching of Yahweh. praise Yahweh for the enemy of Yahweh to be struck blind at the word of Paul.
Well, when you see somebody struck blind at the word of Paul and you don't believe, that's kind of silly.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, but even Jesus said the Pharisees would not believe though one rose from the dead.
Right.
Okay. So he entitles the next section, Paul's Sermon at Antioch. Verse 13, Paul and his company now set sail from Paphos and went to Perga in Pamphylia. But John, separating from them, returned to Jerusalem. Then, proceeding from Perga, they arrived at Antioch of Pisidia, and entering the synagogue on the Sabbath day, they sat down. Then, after the reading of the law and the prophets, the leaders of the synagogue went to them, saying, "Men, brothers, if you have any comforting message for the people, speak it." Okay, so it's really obvious here that the people in this synagogue are sympathetic to Paul, unlike the Jews, who were never sympathetic to Paul once he turned against them. Right? I mean, I shouldn't say it's obvious here, but we can, you know, they wouldn't have invited him to speak if that were the case, okay, if they were like Jews. Verse 16, Paul accordingly stood up and waving his hand said, "Men of Israel and those that reverence God, listen." Now, he's making a distinction between these two, isn't he?
It seems to be that he's making a distinction between the men who were Israelites and those who feared Yahweh.
Right.
But it could be taken as you know, Peter also uses the same literary device.
Okay.
Addressing only Judeans in Acts chapter 2.
Okay.
So it could be taken as a hendiadys, meaning that both objects refer to the same entity.
Okay. So it could be in a positive, namely those Israelites who do reverence God and those who don't, or those who should know better. Okay. In other words, that's what I get you're saying, right?
Well, right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a literary device,
okay,
or a rhetorical device.
So it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, now men of Israel, and of course, Peter already had the understanding that the uncircumcision are Israel. Okay. He finally had that understanding. So it could mean either here, all right? So verse 17, "The God of this people, Israel, chose our forefathers," that is our forefathers, "and raised up the nation during their residence in the land of Egypt, and with a high arm he led them out of it. And for the space of about 40 years he endured their behavior in the desert." Yes, he did endure it, okay? And he was unhappy with most of it all the time. "Afterwards, when he had conquered seven nations in the land of Canaan, he entrusted them with the possession of their country for about 450 years, and contemporary with these events, he gave judges until the end of Samuel the prophet." Now, of course, he is recounting Israelite history, the history that pertains only to the people of Israel. No one else could have known what he was talking about, right?
Well, right. And let me give a little background on Pamphylia.
Okay.
Because that's where Paul's in Pisidia, actually, which is a district in Anatolia, just north-northwest of Pamphylia.
Okay.
Which is on the central southern coast, the center of the southern coast of what we know as Turkey today.
All right.
And Pamphylia was actually believed by the Greeks to be founded by Chalcol.
Ah, okay.
A brother of Darda.
Right, of Zarajuda.
And, right. And that's, his name will be found in 2 Kings 4:31.
Mm-hmm.
Descendant of Zarajuda.
Okay, great.
Now, the area was also inhabited. It was inhabited by people called Phoenicians, who were Israelites of the northern tribes.
Right.
It was inhabited by the descendants of Chalcol, who they were called more or less Minoans. Okay, and the Greeks claimed the Minoans as Greeks, and that's in Josephus against Appian. He labels the Minoans as Greeks.
Okay.
All right, but I mean, it shows the relationships. But when you read all the ancient writers, it shows all the really close relationships between people called Greeks, people called Phoenicians, people called Trojans. All right.
Mm-hmm.
And there was also a large colony of Dorian Greeks there.
Yes.
Who are later Israelites, and I just thought I'd give that little background that even the non-Judeans of this region are definitely dispersed Israelites.
Uh-huh, okay. Gerald says I should be able to unmute guests with numbers under 40. Is that the case? How do I do that?
I've never seen it. Don't
okay. I will definitely call Dave Nelson and get a way of permanently blocking, figuring out how to get a lurker.
Well, they can write code to block somebody by IP number.
Okay.
I don't know if they want to make that investment, but I know it can be done.
Right. Okay. All right. We'll see how that goes. All right. Let's continue then. Verse 21. And when they demanded a kingdom, then God gave them Saul, the son of Kish, a man of the tribe of Benjamin, for the period of 40 years. And when he had removed him, he raised up David for them in the kingdom, and giving evidence about him, he said, David, the son of Jesse, I have found a man after my own heart who will execute all my purposes from his race. This is what I like about Ferrer Fenton. He uses the word race. From his race. God has, according to promise, brought to Israel a Savior, Jesus. John, having to introduce his appearance, proclaimed beforehand a baptism for conversion to all the people of Israel. And as John was completing his mission, he said, what do you suppose me to be? Not I am, but on the contrary, there follows me one, the shoes of whose feet I am not worthy to unfasten. So here, of course, Paul is recounting the history of ancient Israel up until the days of Yahshua Messiah.
Right, and before we get in, I would just like to remark on the 450 years of verse 20 here, and say that this shows that they believe that there were 450 years between the time that Joshua conquered the land of Canaan and the time of Samuel the prophet.
Okay,
and that would mean that there were really 500 years between those two dates. Between the date of the Exodus and the time of Samuel.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like to say that this either pushes it pushes our understanding of the date of the Exodus back to the time of Thutmose II.
Okay.
Or before 1480 BC. Or it pushes the beginning of David's reign up to about 960 BC.
Okay.
Which, by all popular chronologies, is at least 40 years off.
All right.
Now I would just like to say that I would rather believe that the popular dating for the pharaohs is 40 or 50 years off.
Yeah.
And some of those dates are actually based on really shaky ground.
Right. Yes. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. They keep on revising those dates constantly. Okay, so verse 26, men, brothers, sons of Abraham's race, there's that word race again, and those among you who reverence God, to us the message of this salvation is sent. For the inhabitants of Jerusalem and their rulers, ignoring this...
And that statement excludes non-Israelites who simply fear Yahweh, by the way.
Okay.
That just excludes them.
Okay.
Because if the message, the word of salvation is dispatched to the race of Abraham,
right,
what he's saying here.
Right. Okay. Let me repeat verse 27. For the inhabitants of Jerusalem and their rulers, ignoring this, and the voices of the prophets read every Sabbath, have fulfilled it by condemning him, and of Pilate, who found no capital crime here. Pilate is vindicated again, as we found last night was the case. They demanded that he should be executed. But when they had completed all that had been written about him, taking him down from the tree, they placed him in a tomb. But God raised him from the dead, and upon several days he appeared to those who accompanied him from Galilee to Jerusalem, those who now are witnesses for him to the nation. And these people, these witnesses, were still alive, as Paul is recounting these events, and possibly in attendance there at this so-called synagogue. Now, let me ask you a quick question about the word synagogue. That really just means congregation. Right. It's not
a Greek word.
Yes.
It comes from three different words.
Okay.
It's a compound word. Soon can be interpreted here together with. Ago is a verb. Agine means to lead.
Okay.
And geis means ground or earth or land.
Okay.
Or in this case, it would mean ground.
Okay.
And it would be the leading together to the same place,
okay,
or the same ground. It's basically a gathering place.
Gathering place,
best
yes.
Way to translate it.
Okay, so it does not imply a building necessarily, which most people assume it's a building.
Well, right, but it did become the more or less colloquial name for amongst the Judeans for the building that they considered their common gathering place.
Right, right. Okay.
And the synagogue eventually, you know, with the spread of the Judeans throughout the Roman Empire and with their engagement in trade, they had to have places where they could go. And this is all through the Hellenistic period,
mm-hmm.
where they could go, where they could be more or less assured that they could eat food that was approved in the Old Testament.
Ah, okay, right.
Okay, and that they could have quarters and commune with people that were approved in the Old Testament.
Oh, okay, very good.
So they established these gathering places, and they became not only the weekly gathering place for the Sabbath, but also the bed and breakfasts.
Yes.
For Judeans throughout the Roman world.
Yes, yes. And as we found out in chapter 10, Peter did not approve of eating pork.
Well, right.
Yeah,
and they needed separate dining facilities for that reason.
Exactly.
To observe the laws of the Old Testament.
Yes.
And the best way to assure that would be to have the merchants established in each stopping place in the Roman Empire. They established a gathering place of the Judeans called
right.
the synagogue. Where they knew that they could go and still be able to keep the law.
Yeah, and Paul does not admonish these people for keeping their separate rules and regulations, okay? He doesn't say, why aren't you people eating pork?
Right,
you don't have
absolutely.
To worry about eating pork anymore.
Right. The idea is that all Christians who are cleansed by Yahweh go back to those Old Testament precepts.
Yes, yes.
They're not the ways of the Jews.
Right.
The Jews claim it, but that's not true. But we
right.
should all return to those Old Testament precepts.
That's right. And since people confuse the Jews with the Judahites, the Jews don't obey any of the laws of Moses. So, they didn't then and they don't today. But the Judahites did. Okay. The Jews were always making up their own rules. Okay. Verse 32. And we are announcing to you the good news that God, having raised up Jesus by that event, has fulfilled to us, their children, not excluding any outside of the children of Israel, the promise made to our fathers, as also it is written in the second Psalm, you are my son, today I have begotten you. But further, having raised him from the dead, he will no more return to dissolution, which his body did not rot, is what he's saying, right? As he said that I will give to you the assured blessings of David, and he also says elsewhere, you will not allow your gifted one to see dissolution.
Now, I would like to comment on this us, their children line.
Okay.
That's not what the Greek says.
All right.
I'm sorry. It says that in the received text
uh-huh.
that the King James is based on, and it says it in one 7th century manuscript.
Okay.
But in all the ancient manuscripts, it says that it was fulfilled to our children, which is even more exclusive, I believe.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Because you have to be descended from, in other words, it's not just us, their children, us, the children of the fathers. It's the children. In other words, if you're not descended from the people the promise was to, then that's even more exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, that tells you that in
right.
the future, no outsiders can come along.
Right, because the promises were only made to the Israelites and to no other people.
Exactly.
And so Paul is affirming that here.
And the way the King James has it, it's exclusive.
Okay.
However, the truth is that the ancient Greek is even more exclusive.
Okay, yes. Yes, it always is. It always is, yes. Okay, verse 36. Now David, indeed in his own generation. What about generation here?
Well, here I do have generation.
Okay.
And it is the word generation. There are a couple of places in the King James Version in the New Testament where the words geneo or genos have to be translated generation
yes.
in context in
yes.
English.
Okay.
However, the meaning is more complex than the English language allows a word-for-word translation to be.
Right. Right.
Because when the word is used in ancient Greek of people alive at a given time,
mm-hmm.
it still refers only to people of a certain race
yes.
alive at a given time.
Right, right. Okay. It still implies genos as we understand it, meaning race.
Yes, that's okay. always a part of the meaning of the word. That It can never be separated from that meaning.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Even when it's taken in a even when it's in a temporal context.
Right. Very good. Very good. Okay. Continuing with starting again with verse 36. Now David indeed in his own generation, having labored under the instruction of God, slept, and was added to his forefathers and saw dissolution. Now, of course, he uses the word slept, okay, which means that his spirit did not die, as many falsely believe.
Well, absolutely, it remained
yeah.
alive.
Right. But this one, it's just the spirit separated from the body. It doesn't mean that the spirit has died too, as many people falsely believe, even within identity.
Well, to Christians and to our pre-Christian ancestors, slept is a euphemism for death.
Sure.
And when they use that euphemism, it infers that they are confident that the spirit did not meet death.
Right.
That the spirit did not, there's no cessation of the consciousness and life of the spirit.
Right. Right.
So they use slept as a euphemism for death
right.
for
this,
that reason.
Yeah. And just as when we sleep, we often totally lose consciousness of ourselves, yet when we wake up the next morning, here we are. Okay. That does not mean that my personality, my soul, my spirit dissolved into nothingness and then somehow reconstituted itself in exactly the same personality, you know, and it was totally destroyed before reconstituting. You know, that's what these people have to believe if they believe that the spirit dies as well as the body.
Okay? Right.
And
that's just, if there's no consciousness existing after life, first, all of our ancestors were wrong. Because they all write that there is.
Yes.
And every branch of our race writes that of the existence
yes.
of the conscious spirit. A conscious spirit after death.
That's right. That's right. Okay, verse 37. But this one whom God raised up saw no dissolution. Therefore, be it known to you, men, brothers, that through him release from sins is announced to you. Now, here it's very, very important that this is what Paul and Peter were trying to get across to not just the Judaites, but to all Israel. You know, because the Judean Judahites, number one, many of them, as you pointed out last night, and I think we briefly touched on it earlier in this show, many of the true Judahites did not accept Messiah. They
right,
joined...
the book of Acts makes that perfectly clear.
Right, right. And so these people needed to have it drilled into their minds that, yes, their Redeemer, their kinsman Redeemer had indeed come, okay? And then there were many of the dispersion, the Israelites of the 10 northern tribes, plus, you know, Benjamin, Levi, and Judah that merged with them before these days, that they needed to learn this too. You know, they had probably heard about it, but they weren't familiar with the scriptural references or they may have forgotten about those that prophesied the coming of Yahshua. And this is why he's explaining this to them, right? Isn't this exactly what's going on here?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It has to be expounded.
Yes, yeah. And so if you don't have Paul, these people don't get it, do they?
Right. It's very unlikely Christianity would have adhered to the dispersed of Israel without Paul of Tarsus.
Right, absolutely. Okay. And so, you know, people have asked me, you know, well, do we really need Paul? Yeah.
He's
yeah.
the linchpin.
Yes.
That's why Paulus is a Greek word that means to straddle.
Right, right.
He had the education necessary to address the Hebrew world
yes.
and the Greek world.
Yes.
Now,
but
if you examine the book of Acts, you'll see that there's a large number of pagan Greeks at these Judean synagogues.
Okay.
A large number at every synagogue that Paul goes to.
Yes.
And we're going to get into that here real soon.
And they need to hear it too because they are, in fact, Israelites.
They are dispersed Israelites.
And if they weren't, they wouldn't be in the synagogue. It wouldn't be
Absolutely.
Allowed.
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay. All right. From all those things from which you were not able to be acquitted by the law of Moses, every believer in him will be acquitted. So here, all he's saying is that the Israelites who could not be saved under the rituals and sacrifices of the law of Moses.
Well, in reality, the rituals saved nobody anyway. They
That's
were only
right.
a symbol of our salvation.
That's right. And because they never really obeyed the laws anyway, and the rituals became corrupted. Okay? That's what's really going on here. It's not saying that the law of Moses, the Ten Commandments, etc., were abandoned. He's just saying that the whole religious structure as existed then, with the rituals and sacrifices being in the forefront, could not save people. You know, because typically they had more sins than there were being sacrifices offered for. Okay. All right.
And neither can the entire religious structure today save anybody.
That's right. It's not saving anybody today either. Yeah, that's why we're doing this, to get people out of those structures. Verse 40. Take care, therefore, that you do not bring upon yourselves the declaration and the prophets. Attend, you opponents, and wonder and vanish, for I will do a work in your days, a work which you will not believe, if one should display it to you. When they went out, they were requested to have those matters related to them and the time intervening between the next set. So in other words, they wanted to know more. Okay? They had their ears tickled, and now they wanted to hear more. Very good. But when the assembly broke up, many of the Jews and pious proselytes, and we'll see if this Jews includes, if there were some Edomites in the hall here, and there may have been.
Well, there certainly were.
Okay.
I didn't see that.
Okay. But when the assembly broke up, many of the Jews and pious proselytes followed Paul and Barnabas, who, addressing them, entreated them to adhere to the gift of God. Okay,
I'm sorry, what verse are you on right now?
This is verse 43.
Okay. My browser crashed and I was distracted.
Oh, okay. Now, it's certainly possible that we have some true Judahites here who want to, you know, say, well, we need to have these rituals and sacrifices. This is what we've practiced for 2,000 years? Okay. And, you know, you're telling us that we should stop doing this, okay? So many of these people will be opposed to what Paul is teaching here. So the next section, Farrar Fenton, entitled The Jews Reject the Gospel. Of course, we're talking the Judeans reject the gospel.
Right, and this is way too broad even here in that title, and we're going to see that.
Yes, okay, very good.
It's so broad, it's ridiculous.
Right, well, see, he is British Israel. Okay, and the British Israel teaching is that the Jewish people are the tribe of Judah, so they don't make any, you know, they don't have any problems using the word Jew.
Right, and they're absolute morons.
Okay, verse 44. Then on the Sabbath following, nearly the whole town collected to hear the message of God. But the Jews, okay, now here I think we're using the word correctly.
And let me say something real quick about pious converts.
Okay.
They would have to be converts to Judaism from paganism.
Okay.
Before Paul came along. That's
okay. All right. Okay. All right. But the Jews and many of these would have had to be Edomites, but probably some Judahites involved here as well. Seeing the crowds were filled with rage and sneeringly contradicted the statements of Paul. Consequently, speaking out with perfect freedom, Paul and Barnabas said, quote, "It was necessary that the message of God should first of all be delivered to you, the Judahites of Judea," okay, that's to whom the message was first delivered to, the Judahites.
Well, that's because Zechariah 12 has a prophecy.
Okay.
I will save the tents of Judah first.
Yes.
And the apostles took that literally, that the people of Judah had to get the gospel first.
Right. Under
and
no
the only people of Judah that they could readily identify as Judah, I mean, there were a lot of people of Judah in Europe.
Yes.
But that they brought the gospel first to the Judeans.
Right.
Knowing or believing that they were all people of Judah.
And that's
whether
why
or not they were Edomites.
Right. And that's why the house of Judah was kept separate and alive in Jerusalem, so that that prophecy could be fulfilled, and so that the Messiah could come through pure Judahite blood, not contaminated Jewish blood. Okay. So, okay, it looks like The guy figured out how to get a name, and I'm going to have to see if I can eliminate him now. I'll just go ahead and, he left the chat, and now my screen crashed. So let me continue here while I'm fiddling with my screen. But let me just repeat that because it's important. It was necessary that the message of God should first of all be delivered to you, but since you reject it and do not consider yourselves worthy of that eternal life, we will now turn to the Gentiles. Of course, this word Gentiles does not belong in the Bible. I've said this 1,000 times. It's misconstrued. The Jews use it to mean non-Jews or non-Israelites, but the word Gentile never meant that anywhere. That's a very modern definition. To turn to the dispersed of Israel is what Paul is really saying here. For thus the Lord commanded us, I'll just quote the rest of this here, "I have placed you as a light for the heathen, that you should carry salvation to the bounds of the earth." Your comments on these last two verses, that was up to verse 47, including
verse 47. I have quite a few comments on
okay.
these last two.
Okay, very good.
First, the salvation under the ends of earth, that's a quote or a paraphrase. It's a quote of Isaiah 49:6.
Okay.
And it's a paraphrase of Isaiah 42:6. And Isaiah 49:6 said, and he said, is it a light thing that you should be my servant to raise up the tribes of Jacob and to restore the preserved of Israel? I will also give thee for a light to the nations, that thou mayest be my salvation under the earth.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Israel nations.
Yes.
It's raising up the tribes of Jacob, who
yes.
were long dispersed when Paul quotes this. They've been dispersed for 700 years when Paul quotes this.
Yes.
And they've become many nations, and they're all in Europe and